It's spring and you want to hike, bike, hit up the farmer's market, but the last thing you want to do on a warm, sunny morning is clean house. That's where Greenland Pro Cleaning comes in. They're eco-friendly, allergy-friendly, and locally owned in Asheville. Listeners of The Overlook get a free upholstery and refrigerator cleaning upgrade with their first booking. Just use the code PODCAST at checkout. Make the most of your time this spring and visit greenlandprocleaning.com/overlook. Imagine, you're a classical music composer about to premiere your final symphony. Behind the scenes, your family and a stranger are about to throw everything into disarray. Welcome to A God in the Waters, the latest play by the venerable Asheville writer David Brendan Hopes. Look for a lot of laughs, but also a deeper reflection on the making of art and its impact on the people closest to the genius at work. The Sublime Theater presents A God in the Waters May 9th through 18th at the BB Theater in downtown Asheville. For tickets and details, go to thesublimetheater.org.
I am a maker, a builder, a baker, although sometimes my messes are all that you'll find. I'll tell a story, both true and allegorical. The process is precious, so it takes up all my time.
Asheville city leaders have had a complete streets policy in place for more than a decade. That is, a commitment to make streets as friendly to cyclists and pedestrians as they are to cars and trucks. We've seen that policy take shape in the form of so-called road diets along Charlotte Street and North Merriman Avenue and the Riverside Drive Greenway. It's also the reason College Street and Patton Avenue downtown are about to each lose a lane of automotive traffic to make room for bike lanes. And predictably, city officials are hearing a chorus of protest from people who envision apocalyptic traffic.
We're not trying to make anybody's life or commute worse. We are trying to do for the public the best we can. And it certainly doesn't mean that we're going to make everybody happy. And we're human beings as well. And we're just trying to do the best job we can for the citizens and for everyone here.
This is The Overlook with Matt Pikin, a podcast about the news, arts, issues, and trends of Asheville, North Carolina. Jessica Morris is the assistant director of the city's transportation department. She talks with us today about the coming changes downtown and how they're tied to the city's master plan. We get into how the city prioritizes and funds these projects. Jessica also does her best to make sense of projects that to many don't seem to make sense at all. Before coming to Asheville, Jessica Morris had worked in transportation planning in Missoula, Montana, and the Eastern Sierra Mountains of California. I began our conversation by asking where Asheville sits in its quest to make its streets more complete as compared to other places she's worked.
I would say we're very behind, still are, have been, and I think that is a factor of the culture and the topography. For sure, those are the two primary things, I think. But coming from Missoula, Montana, where we had about 7% of the population using a bicycle to commute to here, which is like less than 1%, and the amount of bike lanes and trails we had there versus here, it showed me that we're pretty far behind.
You're talking about two distinct challenges here, talking about topographically and culturally. Mm-hmm. Topographically, not much you can do.
Right.
Culturally, a big difference. What would you say was the difference culturally in Missoula from what you see here in Asheville?
I think it's just the way that town was developed versus here. This is a much older community. And I think just generally speaking, the South, and I'm from the South, so this is, I'm talking about myself as well. I'm from Florida. We are very attached to our cars. And I think when you have the proper infrastructure in place and you have opportunity there, you have a lot more decisions that you can make about how you want to travel. And I think that it's hard to say that the folks in Missoula are like more interested in biking than they are here. I think it's just a factor of there's an interest and there's infrastructure in place to satisfy that desire.
When you say infrastructure in place, mm-hmm. you mean already bike lanes in mm-hmm. certain areas?
Yeah.
We're starting to develop that here. You look on the Greenway on the River mm-hmm. Arch District and the road diet up on North Merriman. Now, I know these are very isolated pieces. Mm-hmm. Do you think that this is not how it all starts only in terms of making it happen, but how it all starts in terms of a cultural shift?
I do. I think there's a lot of different parts and pieces that contribute to that cultural shift, but you can only go so far to convince someone to ride their bike by talking to them. You have to have some infrastructure in place that people feel comfortable using. They're not going to put themselves in an unsafe or a feeling of being unsafe. You have to provide those facilities to folks in order for them to make that shift.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because when I moved here and I lived in the Twin Cities where it's littered with bike lanes everywhere, it's very flat there, mm-hmm. but I had my road bikes, and when I bought my place in North Asheville, it would seemingly be an easy ride right down right. Merriman onto Broadway into downtown, but there were no bike lanes.
Right.
And I thought, I'm not riding on these streets. These people here do not respect cyclists. That was my first observation. Mm-hmm. Getting to the road diet. Now we have bike lanes there. Mm-hmm. What have been the observations of you and your colleagues in the transportation department about the success or impact shift mm-hmm. slash any of that since that was installed?
To some degree, I think it's too early to tell. I will say that in other communities where we've implemented similar projects, like road diets and bike lanes, and pretty much any time we want to add a bike lane now, we have to do a road diet because we're not going to widen streets through these very constrained corridors. So backing up, though, the concerns that the public generally has whenever we bring forward a project idea like that, they're very similar to every other place that I've worked and had done a similar project. There's always concern about congestion. There's always concern about safety. There's concern about no one's going to use it. Nobody rides. And it's a copy-paste situation in a lot of cases where I've worked where we hear those very similar concerns. That doesn't mean that they're not valid. I would say that Asheville is a much more vocal population. And so we had heard and continue to hear a lot of concerns about those projects. But I will say it has slowed down significantly since we've implemented it.
When you say concerns, I read in there what you hear mm-hmm. criticisms. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the copy paste element of things. Do you think some of these are reactions more almost knee jerk, that they aren't experienced reactions? They are more like fear based mm-hmm. reactions.
Yes. I think most people, when they're responding negatively, it might be coming from a place of fear or misunderstanding. You know, maybe we're not doing a good enough job providing information and explaining the perspective that we're coming from. But I do think that a lot of it is just not having experienced it in other places, perhaps, and not looking at it maybe from other people's point of view as well, I think comes into it.
Talk about what goes into deciding, and this is leading up to the changes coming up on college and Patton.
Okay.
What goes into deciding we need to, or we are interested in looking into changing mm-hmm. the traffic flow and making X street or boulevard more pedestrian and cycling friendly? What goes into that?
This might be a long answer. So there are a ton of things that go into it, and it goes from high-level policy down to the project on the ground being implemented. Policy starts with our comprehensive plan. So the city's comprehensive plan, adopted in 2016, has a lot of statements and goals about wanting to improve multimodal transportation. And we see similar policy goals in downtown master plan, our transportation plan called the Asheville in Motion Plan, and then we have a complete streets policy as well. So all of those documents, plans, policies, they're setting the stage, so to speak, for whether you're talking about affordable housing, community health, public safety, all of those documents have goals and policies that are stating an intention. The intention of the city of Asheville through those policies is to provide more transportation options. And the reasons for that largely speak to not just trying to make it possible to not have a car, but also to help with affordability issues, help with community health, not to mention sustainability and climate change. It's not just necessarily about being able to ride your bike or having improved sidewalks or transit. It's all working towards a lot of different goals that the city has. When it gets hard is when we go to actually implement a specific project on a specific road, right? Because I think 99% of the people that live here, maybe not quite, but when you say, do you support sustainability? Do you support multimodal transportation? Do you support mitigating climate change? Yes, yes, yes. The rubber meets the road, literally, is where it gets hard.
Right. It's a classic NIMBY mentality, right?
That's one label you could use. I hate to necessarily label that on anybody in particular. But,
right. But when people support something in concept,
yeah,
that's different than, oh, how is it going to affect me? Oh, this is really going to affect me? Oh, I don't know about this. And that's what you're talking about, this dichotomy.
Yes, it's a dichotomy. And I think it's normal and natural to have those feelings when something does impact your life. It has a lot more significance than if it didn't.
Where the rubber meets the road is we've got policy that the city of Asheville, through its civic leaders, city leaders, elected officials, have decided we are going to lean into making our streets more multimodal friendly. So that's our default. We want our streets to be that way. Mm-hmm. And we're going to identify certain projects. Then what goes in? Are there studies that the transportation department undertakes at that point? Once you've identified, yes, we want to do something with X street or boulevard, what happens then?
So we do have transportation plans, and even in our downtown master plan, part of that effort is not just necessarily high-level policy, but also putting lines on a map, so to speak, and saying this road could be part of the bicycle network. You really need improved sidewalks on this street. So we do go beyond just saying we want more multimodal. We actually have plans that say these are candidates for those types of projects.
So right now, already laid out, there are candidates. Are they already prioritized? Is there an A list that these will happen first before a B list or C list? Is that how it works?
In an ideal world, yes. We do have, I think, a need for, if we're just talking about bicycle facilities, we have a need for an updated bicycle master plan, but we do have a recently completed greenway plan and pedestrian plan that do have kind of that top tiers of lists of projects needs. And then it doesn't always happen where you're building project number one first and number two second. Sometimes conditions or grant opportunities, or you might move like something that's fifth in the list down to a top project.
Yeah. So talk about that a little bit. How much do finances and budgeting come down to making some of these things a reality? It's one thing to have the policy and to actually identify, yes, this street needs something. It's another to make it happen. Is it basically the lowest cost projects win?
Not always. A lot of our projects in transportation, we've been really fortunate to get a lot of grants. When we're talking mostly about sidewalks and greenways in particular, we get a lot of grants for those. And that helps us overcome financial challenges and helps a project that might be more costly because of topography, for example. We can use grants to help us forward those.
More after this. When you go to an Asheville City Soccer Club game, you're not just watching soccer. You're welcomed into what players and fans call the South Slope Blues.
The South Slope Blues, they're amazing.
This is the coach of the women's team, Brooke Bingham.
The atmosphere is what makes Asheville City Soccer so great.
Longtime player Laura Greb.
We have the most dedicated fans. We have our South Slope Blues. They post up in the corner of the field every game. They've got their drums, they've got their smoke, they've got their loud voices. You can hear them for miles.
Elite men and women players from throughout North Carolina team up in Asheville for a two-month season against other aspiring pros from all over the Southeast. Home games this season begin May 18th at Greenwood Field on the UNC Asheville campus. For details, tickets, and your first steps into the South Slope Blues, visit Asheville City Soccer Club at AshevilleCitySC.com. Now, we were talking a little bit ago about criticisms, feedback that you get, and from what I see on social media, people are already in a semi-dither about what they think is going to happen on Patton Avenue and in College Avenue. What is happening there? Describe the Complete Streets project as it will manifest on Patton and College.
So we recently asked our city council to approve the installation of bike facilities on College and Patton in our core of downtown. So there'd be a bike lane on College on the left-hand side and a bike lane on Patton on the left-hand side. And we expect that project to move forward in the spring, summer of next year. And essentially, the project will add a bike lane. It will remove one of the vehicle lanes. The turn pockets will remain. Traffic signals will remain. We're not moving any curb lines. It's essentially just a restriping project.
So what you're saying, it's just a restriping, but let's be clear. If you're taking away a lane of automobile traffic, that's bound to have some impact, significant impact on motorists' ability to get from point A to point B using those streets, right?
I would quibble a little bit about the significant part of that.
Why would you quibble with that?
I think it depends on one's perspective. It also depends objectively on the time of day. There are guidelines that we follow that give you an idea of what can a single lane road handle in terms of the daily traffic versus a multi-lane road. So College and Patton have about 5,000-6,000 cars a day. That is well within the number of vehicles that you can easily move on a single lane. There are times of day, peak periods, where congestion occurs on every roadway we have, right? Merriman, I think it's fair to say, without having seen the data, that we have increased congestion during peak periods because of the road diet.
Right.
I do think that we will see that on College and Patton. I think what the city is trying to do with these projects is say, we're okay with more congestion because the benefit is that you're providing access to people that don't have cars. You're providing improved access.
I want to say, I thought it was interesting that council only approved it by a 4-3 vote. This is very close.
It was.
So it's not as if there was a consensus. What does that tell you about this city's commitment to be behind these projects?
I generally think that even though the vote was close, I do think that the council is committed to multimodal transportation and the things that it provides. I think it's, again, when you get to the project on the ground, that's when things become a little more questionable. And it's their job to consider everything that they're hearing from the public. So I don't think that a close vote necessarily means that the council members who voted no don't care about those things. I think they have a difficult job of weighing all of the perspectives that they're and their constituents that they're hearing from. I don't know that if it were a different roadway, it could be a 7-0 vote for, you know. So I think this was a difficult project because it's in the center of our downtown.
Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is projected use of these. Now, you rode to this interview on an e-bike. You came up in an e-bike. I don't have an e-bike. I have two road bikes. And what are you seeing? What is your department seeing in terms of the impact and the proliferation of e-bikes? Is that making a sizable difference in the number of people using our bike infrastructure now?
I wish I could say with certainty, with data to back it up, to say, yes, there's been an X percent increase, and it's due to e-bikes. And I think anecdotally, e-bikes are becoming way more prolific. They're coming down in cost, just like a lot of technology does eventually. I think that it removes that major barrier that we have here, which is the topographical barrier. I'm not in shape at all. Like, I would not be able to bike here if it weren't for that e-bike. And I know that makes it a lot easier, and it makes it a possibility that didn't exist before for a lot of folks.
Yeah. Another thing you mentioned about being in shape, but I also know they're expensive. E-bikes are not cheap. When we're talking about accessibility, and while some people can't afford cars, don't have access to cars, some people can't afford e-bikes. Some cities do have bike share programs. To my knowledge, and this, it's been a while since I've lived in a city that has a bike share program, but they didn't involve e-bikes. I think they were just pedal bikes. Mm-hmm. Are there bike share programs happening now involving e-bikes? And if so, do you see something like that on the horizon in Asheville? Are you talking, is the city talking with different bike companies that do this?
There are many bike share programs now across the world that have electric bikes as part of the fleet. At the time that the city started thinking about bike share, and we have a draft bike share plan that kind of got stalled out a little bit, e-bikes weren't really popular at all. Like, they were just starting to hit the market. Just in the 2-3 years since that draft plan was created, it's completely changed. And I think that if and when the city ever has a bike share program, it will absolutely include e-bikes.
How will something like that, how can something like that happen in Asheville? What does it take? Does it take a private company? Is it something where the city takes that on themselves? How does a bike share program enter a city?
My experience is that it's usually a private company that works with the city. They have to have permits and things like that. So they would have to, I think, sit down with the city and work with us to decide how a program like that would be rolled out.
Because frankly, to make this, I would think in the public's eyes, whether driver A or driver B ever gets on a bike, I think visibility is important. When they see people using this infrastructure that's put in place, even if it slows them down, even if it in their eyes negatively impacts their own commute or their own time, they can at least understand, oh, now I see why this is happening. Mm-hmm. On the road diet, I drive that road every day. And again, I am in favor personally. I like what's happened, even though I tend to drive fast. I don't drive fast on that street. You can't now. But I can go many days without seeing a cyclist. I do see them once in a while.
Right.
But the use has not yet caught up with the availability, the infrastructure that's in place.
Right.
How important is visibility to making something like this politically palatable over the long haul?
There are studies that show that the more bicyclists there are, the more bicyclists there are. You know, I mean, that is a part of the cultural transition that has to take place, or that I would expect will take place once we start to put some of these pieces of the network together. I think one of the things that's really important about the Merriman Road Diet was safety was really the primary reason why the city was interested at all in doing that project. Merriman has a significant number of crashes, more than a similar roadway in a different city. The city of Asheville is routinely at the top of the list of pedestrian and cyclist fatalities and serious injuries annually.
Yeah, we still see that all the time in this city.
Year after year. And you can't change those things without making physical infrastructure changes and cultural changes. Like, we can't convince everyone to just be safer. So we need to do things proactively to try to make it safer for everyone on the road.
So Jessica, we're talking about, in one hand, visibility, another is data. And you've mentioned we don't have the data yet. What kind of studies are happening now or will happen soon to give city leaders and by extension the public real information about the impact in terms of safety, in terms of use, mm-hmm. in terms of changes to how these mm-hmm. streets are used and the safety of them once these changes happen. Mm-hmm. When are we going to have data that supports or at least informs mm-hmm. the impact of these changes?
So with any project, we aim to have before data and after data. And so for Merriman, we will have before and after data on vehicle speeds, the number of vehicles that are moving along. We will have crash data before and after. We'll have congestion data, travel time. We also have before and after data for Charlotte Street, that road diet. Not saying that they're similar roadways, but we collect before and after. And for example, on Charlotte Street, we saw decreased speeds, which you would expect. We saw decreased crashes, decreased severity of crashes, which is a lot of times you might see more rear end accident, like the rear end accidents might go up, but that's a less severe crash than a different kind, you know, so those are the countermeasures or those are the changes that we're trying to make from an infrastructure standpoint to improve overall safety.
So we're already seeing that the Charlotte Street changes have been in long enough. Mm-hmm. The road diet that happened on Charlotte Street has been there long enough to already
measure. Yeah.
And so regardless whether cyclists are using those lanes to the degree city officials want, from what you're telling me, mm-hmm. we're seeing differences that are part of the goals when it comes to safety and mm-hmm. and motor speeds.
Correct. And I can say that with confidence for Charlotte Street. The Merriman Road Diet has not been installed for long enough. And in fact, I'm not sure NCDOT is completely finished with some of the striping. And I think they've still got some changes they want to make, tweaks they want to make to signal timing. But it also takes months, if not years, for behavioral change to occur and for things to settle in and people to get more used to things. And so in transportation world and in data world, after a change occurs, you want to have a reasonable period of time to make sure that any trends you see are real, like they're not just a blip.
Right. Now, when are we going to see Merriman's diet extended to where it connects from downtown to mm-hmm. where Luella's, whatever that street is, mm-hmm. where Luella's barbecue is and where mm-hmm. the university is? When is that change going to happen?
So that is not on anybody's current radar.
It isn't.
The moment. It is not. No.
Okay. No. Well, oh, that's interesting. Because that, in a way, it's not a complete street. In a way, it's an incomplete street. Mm-hmm. Why is that not mm-hmm. on the radar? And I'm not suggesting it would be an improvement or not. But when we're cutting off there, you take out the ability to go north-south from downtown up to mm-hmm. Beaver Lake. Why not mm-hmm. complete that street?
Incremental improvement is the name of the game for everyone in government, right? And I will say that was looked at, and at the time, both NCDOT and the city said, let's not push it. Let's see if we can have success with the northern part of Merriman, which has less vehicle traffic and less activity. You know, that part of Merriman, just north of I-240, there's a lot going on there, a lot of driveways and such. And so everyone felt more comfortable with W.T. Weaver North. I think after things have settled in and we've looked at data, maybe someday that will be looked at, but I can assure you that, you know, it's not something that anyone is actively planning on doing right now.
So you're talking about Weaver. So Weaver has bike lane infrastructure, but then when you take that down to Broadway, North Broadway, that also does not have bike lane infrastructure. Is there any talk about, now that's not a highway. Mm-hmm. We've got two lanes going in each direction with a median. Is mm-hmm. there any talk about eliminating one of those lanes and putting in a bike lane there?
No, there's not. We do have the Reed Creek Greenway and we're looking to extend that greenway south and over I-240 down by off of Hill Street.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And that's a long-term plan. But I mean, what you're hinting at is this, these sort of disconnected pieces. And I think sometimes when a lot of the criticism we get is about that disconnectedness of the system and like, why are you putting in this piece when it doesn't have a connecting piece? Why don't you do that other piece over there first and wait until that's done to do this? And those are absolutely valid questions and concerns. And
yeah, how do you respond to that? Because that goes right to use when you're trying to make things more convenient for and more encourage when you're trying to encourage multimodal use. And you as a cyclist see, I can get from point A to point B, but where? How do I get from point B to point C?
Yeah. And the only answer that I can give, which is the true one, is that we try to connect the pieces as we can. And a lot of times it's based on opportunity, based on grant funding, based on, is NCDOT going to be resurfacing this road? Is this an opportunity for us to put in a bike facility? But the order in which the pieces get put on the ground, it's not always in order or in the order that would make the most sense or the order that we would want. It's just, how can we do these pieces bit by bit? Sometimes it's the private sector. So there's a lot of moving parts, but I think it's important to know that we're not just randomly putting these pieces out there. There is a plan in place. There are policies in place to support it. And we do the best we can to put those connecting pieces together.
Yeah. So when are we going to see actual change happen on College and Patton? When is the striping, restriping as you termed it, when is that going to start and what's the timeline for it?
So our next step is to put out a bid document for that work to be done. And I'm hoping that we can get that bid document out before the end of the year. Then that means we would hopefully receive bids and select a contractor. So I think spring, summer, early summer is the goal that I have for me, for my staff and my city. Yeah.
So what is being looked at in terms of next projects? I think of everything south of downtown. Mm-hmm. We don't have any bike lane structures, at least coming out of downtown, unless you count Charlotte Street to where it connects back into Biltmore. Mm-hmm. Are there any projects to make south? Because I get reports from APD saying another crash happened on either Sweeten Creek or somewhere in South Asheville.
Yeah.
What kind of plans are afoot, if any, to make those streets complete streets?
I think what you'll see most of next is not necessarily on street bike lanes, but many more greenways. And greenways are for bicyclists too. And a lot of people, I think of greenways as recreation, but they're absolutely transportation facilities. So people are using them just as commuting facilities just as well. I'll plug our newly adopted greenway plan on the city's website, and we've got a number of greenways that are in the queue for construction as well as they're in the design stage or the planning stage. So we're trying to move those projects through the queue. The ones that we'll see probably sooner rather than later would be one that's called the Nasty Branch Greenway. That's in the Southside community. We are doing a project called the Greenway Connector Project, and that's going to be partly on Depot Street, some improvements there that will connect to the future Nasty Branch Greenway. We've got greenways proposed for Cote Branch and Bowcatcher. So there's all kinds of facilities that we are aiming to roll out in the next 10 years.
Super. Is there anything we haven't talked about or talked about enough that you want to expound on or amplify a little more?
I guess what I want people to know is that my department is, we're not trying to make anybody's life or commute worse. Like, I think we have a lot of opportunity here to make some shifts in how we view transportation and how we view getting from place to place. And one of the things that's been troubling to me is that a lot of folks have said, oh, this is my personal pet project, or I'm the one doing this, or my staff is, and it's absolutely not the case. Like, we are trying to do for the public the best we can. And it certainly doesn't mean that we're going to make everybody happy. And we're human beings as well, and we're just trying to do the best job we can for the citizens and for everyone here.
Our First Look newsletter gives you just a handful of daily headlines from around the local media landscape to get you on your morning. We also have a weekly newsletter devoted to all things The Overlook that hits you every Friday. Both are free and available at podavl.com/newsletter. I want to thank my guest today, Jessica Morris of the City of Asheville's Transportation Department. Our conversation happened inside the BB Theater in downtown Asheville. The owners, Susan and Giles Collard, have been so gracious enough to allow me to record my interviews there. Our theme music for The Overlook, Maker's Song, comes courtesy of the Asheville band The Resonant Rogues. The Overlook is a production of Podcast Asheville. New episodes come out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on any social media channel at AVL Overlook. And I'll see you on the next episode of The Overlook with Matt Pikin. Hey everyone, Matt Pikin here from The Overlook, and I'll get back to my conversation in just a moment. But I'm asking you, the listener, yes, you, listening this very moment, is The Overlook making a difference in your connection to Asheville? Do you know more about what makes this city tick and where we're struggling? If you had to give up one cup of coffee every month to do your part to keep this show going, would you step up? If you answered yes to any of that, and I really hope you did, please join dozens of other listeners by supporting The Overlook with Matt Pikin through my Patreon campaign by giving just $5 a month. Give at higher levels and you'll earn free tickets to my live podcasting events. Your support means the world to me and helps keep this show free for anyone to hear. Go to patreon.com/theoverlookpodcast.